Hello.
Hi, I'm here.
Well, hey, everybody. I hope you guys are all doing great. We're going to talk about the next two steps in the roadmap process in terms of mapping wellness strategies. But first, and thanks for managing the background noise, questions, comments, anything that you'd like to clarify or discuss just a little bit further? Anything from anyone? Let me touch on a couple of things that I think are important at this point. And remember, we'll have an additional time at the end of next seminar after the top of the hour for discussion and questions for you guys to come in hot, lively, and coffeeed up so that you'll talk to me and I won't get lonely. Okay, a couple of things that have been sent in. How will this enrich my client's life? Well, now, that's a good question. There are two ways, since you wanted a specific answer. One is now, and the next answer is next. Now is you are co-creating a way with the client as point of reference for their story, and in this case, a wellness story, to develop that in a systematic way. And remember, we talked about more than once, if you want to change, look at the system or create a system, not at the goal. So you're creating a system of looking at what specifically someone wants to focus on, where they want to get to, and they've bookended the conversation. They've created a map so that all the things that aren't part of that focus and destination aren't paid attention to. Just like with the map, you're where you are and you focus on the destination. So you're helping someone create a systematic way of a specific focus and developing a way to successfully approximate their specific goal and to shrink the change to make it a stepwise process so that they experience effectiveness with that process with you each time. Now, the later part, while you're talking about all this, they're downloading the model of interaction with you. They're downloading a systematic way of going about things that you and they are co-creating, and they're also experiencing the effectiveness, and you may be helping them. We'll come to this a bit more in our next seminar about the last step of the roadmap, the program New Identity, about incorporating that operating system of who and how they are, that they can more and more automatically do that, or at least in the beginning, call it to mind and engage that process. So they'll have that process the other 23 hours and 7 days that you're not talking with them. So you're helping them create a systematic way to go about focusing and looking at their process and understanding it. With their point of reference for both of these and everything in between, it's their story, and they're experiencing an effectiveness. And the most basic desire that we have as human beings is effectiveness. I've seen direct infant observations, studies of kids as early as 3 months of age that have an effectiveness pleasure, a pleasure of being a cause. And that continues throughout our lives and is the basic motivating force of what we do. We do what we decide to do because we imagine how we're going to feel when we do it. Basic effectiveness. So that's going to be important, and what you contribute to helping your client develop their own stories, their own way of going about systematically looking at something and creating a better story. We're focusing here on wellness, but these same principles, the seven steps, the acronym of understanding and changing the algorithms that go into a story can work for any story, but we'll stay focused on wellness. So I hope that begins to answer that question. The first of two or three came from Tammy, so I hope that that helps. There's another part of the of the answer that has to do with mindset. And two or three of you ask about mindset. Two or three of you ask a question that I would say has to do with mindset. So here's something that you may want to consider in terms of wellness, and then we'll get into the material. Remember, we talked about how a state of mind determines the software that you boot up, and how you frame something determines how you go about processing it. So think about one of my favorite social scientists recently, Dr. George Lakoff, wrote a book, Don't Think About an Elephant. Well, that frames everything you do. Think about when you're looking at problems, help the client reframe to looking at possibilities. That's what we do as coaches. We help someone to frame and engage possibilities, challenges. So as mentor coaches, we specialize in change and transformation. What we're expert at is choice architecture. Our framework of operating is collaboration with others. That's the framework, always with the client as point of reference. So one of our sweet spots is helping someone regulate a state of mind for optimum responsiveness and peak performance, because of all the states of mind, all the software programs, there's usually one that's going to work better for a specific task, and you might as well get expert at booting it up. So this is something that is really fundamental. Let me give you one more example that takes a broader time span. A large group of people were asked at a Vatican conference about longevity. How many of you would want to live to 120 if you could? What do you think their response? Two-thirds of the group wanted no part of that. They projected, in most instances, they projected their current situation and what was available, and the future did not look that great. So here's one thing that can make a difference about the power of the mind and the power of the mind to both be present and heal and look forward. You've heard about placebos, and you know about this, and I know there's some, a handful of docs in attendance, and this is redundant. Placebos have tremendous power over pain and even degenerative diseases. The placebo effect was discovered by an anesthesiologist, Henry Beecher, during World War II when he ran out of morphine in the middle of a German bombardment. And he found that when he gave saline and told the soldiers that it was a pharmacological painkiller, it kept the soldier from going into shock. And he later at Harvard Medical studied this to show that the placebo was essentially as effective as the actual drug. So here's something to think about in a slightly different perspective. This is a classic study by Dr. Ellen Langer, professor of psychology at Harvard, took a group of older men on an isolated New England retreat. The hotel was retrofitted with very visible cues, magazines, TV shows, movies from exactly 20 years earlier. The subjects were told to act as if they had spoken We're speaking in current events, current tense, 20 years ago. At the end of 5 days of this sort of counterclockwise experiment, the men showed measurable improvement in memory, hearing, vision, grip strength, joint flexibility, and posture. Their arthritis improved based on before and after photos by observers. They even looked younger. The common thread of these studies, a positive mindset can reverse the aging process. Now, here's a current application, and I'll get to what we should be talking about. When your mind tends to go to fear, like we see during COVID-19, according to the Centers for Disease Control, the number two mortality risk factor for people with COVID, what would you guess? immediately behind obesity. That was number one. The next was anxiety and fear-related disorders. That trumped severe diabetes, chronic kidney disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or heart disease as number two for killing people. That's what we can offer people to help them regulate states of mind, manage emotions, create a very different wellness and even life story. The CDC scientists were amazed at it, but Norman Cousins told them a long time ago, our bodies are apothecaries. We convert our expectations into chemical reality. Our minds make us either healthy or sick. So I hope that addresses some of the questions that sort of, in my view at least, clustered around this. I'm going to put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the background noise for what we're going to cover in this seminar. But any clarification or any anything anybody wants to add to that? Okay, I'll put us on lecture mode. Okay, in our first two seminars, we looked at the power of story, and we've covered the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize authorship of your wellness story. Own your story. Assess the plot and storylines, and see how these go in sequence. You have to recognize it and own it before you can assess it. Then, with assessment, you can decide what to change, what to keep, what to let go. So, step five. We're going to talk about map changes in your wellness story, simply map wellness strategies. Now, I want to refer you back, and I hope you've looked at these, maybe have done them, 14 steps to edit your story, page 2.12, and 5 steps to revise a storyline, 2.14. Those will be helpful to look at to really succinctly be able to review and reflect on what you're doing. If you have decided to create an appointment yourself to focus on working on your wellness story and use any of the exercises to use as a prompt or a catalyst, these are the two I'd especially highlight to see if you find them helpful. So basically, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They may be experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Many years ago, I started one of the first couple of major multi-specialty treatment programs for eating disorders in this country. This was in the first half of the 1980s when I left Baylor and did this as part of what I did. Those patients could tell me more at that time, which probably wasn't that hard, about food and weight and eating than I could. But yet, all of their knowledge was not enough to help them change or transform. And my entire treatment team of experts and me had to figure out ways to help them revise their own stories in the there and then language. Now, underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined cause. But a coaching approach is to reframe to look at possibilities instead of going backward, looking at causes or problems. That re-enters the same network, neural network in your brain, and it etches it further every time you explore, as we've talked before, to look at new and different ways to proceed as a challenge, as an opportunity, begins a process of creating new neuronal networks and pathways in the brain. So people need nudges as well as reframing at times when they're least likely to make good choices for decisions that are difficult or rare, for which they don't get feedback, or when they have trouble translating into understandable terms, or simply in reflecting on their own experience and process, or when they persist in reentering an old story, which makes it seem effective, but it's predictable, not effective, and they get stuck. So here are six crucial elements to map change. This is in your outline. When you understand and incorporate each of these six, you have an outline to master a story of wellness. One, regulate states of mind. This is crucial because a state of mind is like a software program. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and how we process. We have many different states of mind, so we want to regulate that to focus on what will be the most effective state at this particular time and task. Different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, performance flow, all different states of mind. So a key element is to be aware of the different states of mind, to know which works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing and editing, two different parts of the brain, different times that you get immersed and sustain in one state of mind, not to mix them up. When someone's in an emotional state, they may get marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain hijacks the intellectual logical brain and even holds it hostage. So let's look at how to regulate states of mind. The most important thing we can do to achieve success is to manage emotions and regulate states of mind. And there are some studies, I've mentioned a couple. There are many studies that illustrate this. So what do you think these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind, using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can be significantly compromising. Your state of mind, the particular software you use, determines the meaning you attach to a particular stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. So there are a couple of ways that are the most powerful ways to regulate a state of mind: physiology and focus. And physiology, how you use your body, can change your whole biochemistry. Think about how, and what you know, those of you who, and most of you are familiar with a mindfulness meditation. What do? You get relaxed. You focus on your physiology, relaxing your body, breathing in relaxation, and breathing out tension. As you do that, at the same time, you focus on a specific thought to align the energy field of your brain, a thought that fits with what you want to engage in the experience. And it may be, if you want to go to sleep more effectively, relaxed to sleep. Or if you're about to do a keynote, relaxed and powerful. And I have, but the phrase, as you hear it, needs to fit with the particular task. When I work with pro golfers, for example, a phrase that is used for a big booming drive, like relaxed and powerful, may be different for the mid irons, where you need to be very precise, or a putt, where you need to be relaxed and smooth. So this is something that, let me give you an example, as those of you who have not listened to the Master States of Mind. It's a free 20-30 minute webinar on my homepage. Well, there's a case study that initiated some of the studies in this area. I won't go over it now because of time, but you can listen to it. It's a way of applying this to a focused, relaxed state. And the coach who employed this began when he inherited a basketball team that was 217th out of 217, dead last in his division. He did the relaxation, the cue, the focus, the physiology, and the 4 to 5 seconds with their practice of free shots, and then simulated the game by blowing the whistle and had them go to the line, do the practice. In 2 years, they were number one in their division nationwide. So this is an application of how to specifically be focused. It may be perhaps the most important thing before you receive a call or log on to work with a client. It's something I do before each time I do a training, work with a client. My cue has been hardwired, and you'll see on the Master States of Mind how something gets hardwired, and how a cue for me is just putting my index finger and thumb together, how that instantly boots up a state of mind of total focus. I've had people I've worked with. I work with an all-pro cornerback, and I've mentioned this before. After each play, he would simply say to himself, reboot, because football is episodic. It's not a flow like basketball or before someone goes on stage or does a presentation. Do whatever works for you and whatever fits the task. So here are some ideas then about why we do what we do in coaching. A good question focuses the energy field of the brain and begins a collaborative exploration. So this is a step that you can do for yourself in looking at and reflecting on your state of mind, how to get in the state. And the best mentors, leaders, teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to keep the point of reference in the listener or the reader. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David simply asked, well, if he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people wanted to buy a cup of coffee or a latte, but do you want a concept of community, a third place between home and work? Here's an exercise. And I've used this in some instances where executives were noticing that in two instances where I started doing this in different situations, they noticed that some traumas that had happened at their place of business, serious life-taking accidents, were affecting them and their people. Write down, before you go to bed, or at least sometime during the day, three questions that put you in a peak state, a very empowered state. The next morning, before your feet ever touch the floor, when you turn on the lamp, take that piece of paper and answer those three questions. Now, remember, you're already asking questions. You may not even be conscious of it, but you're wondering. As soon as as your eyelid barely creeps up in slow motion photography of someone, what's going to happen today? What am I going to do? Well, you're asking questions. This is a way simply to systematically ask the best questions that are going to put you in a state of mind to really powerfully engage the day. It will make a difference. Think about the other way. When you stub a toe, you know, you're going to have a bad 2 or 3 hours if you let it. These two individuals, they were still thinking months later, what bad's going to happen? Are we going to get in legal trouble? Is somebody else going to die? And none of that was helping them because they had already done the thing, but this created a different mindset. So this is really about regulating a state of mind most immediately the example I gave of the free shot basketball players regulates the state of mind in the 3 to 5 seconds it takes to dribble twice, the cue, to have a focus phrase, relaxed and smooth, and to visualize nothing but net, to visualize the shot going through, so that they are having a cue, the phrase, and then a deep breath. So mantras can both calm and keep you from overthinking or get you in an optimum performance state. Two, to map change. The number two element to map change. The power is in the focus. Now, think about how this is going to sound a little woo-woo, so kind of hang with me here. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects the frequency. It's kind of like all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available, but we choose the channel. We choose the frequency we want out of hundreds of possibilities. Now, we each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, change the channel, change your thoughts. The three questions that boot up an empowered state of mind, that's one way to do it. Now, here's an explanation. You didn't think I'd lay all this on you without being a little scientific and even wrapping in a little bit of Einstein with it. So hang on. Quantum physics offers us some understanding. The quantum Zeno effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. The brain rewires. I have a buddy who's a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA who developed this theory and has shown how repetitively it works. So this concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. The brain connections literally become mind maps and then influence the reality that we see. We have to see it to believe it. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on challenge, on possibility, on solution. The already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems. It's like look and see what you see and not have any presumptions about that versus don't think about an elephant. Now, the existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems. This is why people get stuck in therapy. They go back into the pathways that are already there, etch them further each time you work on the solution to the problem because you're re-entering the problem pathway. The law of attraction is based in neuroscience. The law of attraction basically is if you lay analogously, if you lay a nail and a paperclip side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip. Why? Well, the molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. Most of you have seen the film The Secret. Their adage is ask, believe, and receive. I think they got 2 out of 3 right. The law of attraction, though, won't give you what you want. You don't have to, you can't just wait and receive it. You know, it will give you the energy to sustain the process to create it, but it won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. You can save at least a dollar. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this. Ask, believe, create. And you create in the direction of how you've aligned your energy field. Now, the paradox, we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. So be sure you and your clients are focusing on the right thing. Focusing on problems will get you a conversation about problems. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your field to pursue a strategic way for prosperity. So, my grandmother, my favorite grandmother, offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. Her summary, wishes don't wash dishes. Now, so your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. A print or negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. So the power of focus is be sure you're focusing on the right thing to align yourself to create. So I want to get out of debt. That's a focus on debt. That's a negative. I want to lose weight. Negative focus again. And here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. So Dr. Joseph Murray said it most succinctly. Your unconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your unconscious mind works to make it true. So notice which people worry about illness, which talk about pain or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So put energy into what you want, possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. When you focus on what you want, what you don't want falls away, kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. Jung said some problems can't be solved, they just got to be outlived. So quantum physics, I promise you I'll get to Einstein now. Quantum physics offers us another paradigm of this principle. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. Einstein talked about we are a bundle of energy and we interact with another person who is also a bundle of energy. And then there is that shared field, the intersubjective third, of how one influences the other, not through conscious logic or intellectual means. Einstein called it a unified field theory. Basically, we're bundles of energy, and we interact even with a group of people as a collective bundle of energy. So here's a natural experiment, I think, for this principle. The NBA plays, and let's call it a regular non-COVID season. They play 84 games, 42 away, 42 at home. There's a usual crowd of 60 to 75,000 at home games, away games. Every team in the NBA loses more games away than they do at home. And every team in the NBA wins more games at home than they do away. When they're away, there's a negative, mostly a negative energy field, sending bad thoughts. And at home, just the opposite. It energizes. So here's a summary then of the law of attraction. Most important principle is to focus on you, on what you want rather than what you don't want. Make the focus conscious. Challenge and target the specific outcomes that you want. So let's do an exercise. You're on lecture mode, so you're mute. I would like you, after every, I'm going to make 4 statements. I want you to say out loud, after each statement, your wish is my command. Okay? I'm tired. I'm late. I worked out today. I've been eating healthily all day. What was your experience? Take a read and reflect on what your experience was with each of these 4. Did you feel a bit more energized or vibrant with the last 2 than the first two? Did you feel a little bit tired or anything in that realm with the first two? So this is what's important as we help our clients focus on what they can determine, let go of what they can't, and create a systematic way to look at what's the next step and then what's the next step after that. William James, the father of American psychology, said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." And back again to my favorite grandmother, the secret critic. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. You can use that one. Think about it. Three, visualize changes. I've already sort of covered this. I included a chapter from Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual, in the workbook on visualizing changes, which is a way to rewire the brain, and creating affirmations, which is a way to revise mind software. And there are a number of studies that you'll see some of the nodal ones, and especially an initial one or two in the workbook. So there's an art and a science to a vision, and you know, the science is that when we visualize something, it activates the brain in exactly the same way as if that vision came through the optic nerve. The brain can't tell the difference whether you imagined it or whether you saw it in the optic nerve. So if you create the vision such as, and you'll see the examples of this in that chapter, such as the successful outcome of something, and you revisit that vision, the experience of the successful outcome, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, after a time, you'll rewire your brain. You'll create a future memory to back into so you can strategically approximate that. And then the affirmations are something that you consciously do to support the story of the visual. The visualization rewires your brain. The affirmations revise mind software to create a positive frame and a story to make it make sense. So it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're a part of our identity. But a vision starts at the other end, the successful outcome. If somebody has a fear of success or a fear of failure, the visioning process bypasses that fear and etches the successful outcome. One of the first books I did, Fear and the Fear of Success in Women, as a psychoanalyst, I've changed my mind. This is a much more effective way to do it, much more efficient, shorter term, and effective. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So this is a way of visualization brings about chemical changes in the brain, replays, etch it to be a stronger neuronal network and net in the brain. So when you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. So now here's the key. You do not make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. That's the P of the roadmap, program new identity. Otherwise, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise. We're going to talk about that in more detail next time because our identity is the most powerful force of our human psyche. If we make a change in our lives of any sort, unless we incorporate it into our identity, it will not be permanent. How we revise our basic operating system, our identity, which we always return to, is a final step, and it's what makes change permanent. Think about how many decisions you make just on the basis of your identity. Here's a goofy example. A few decades ago, I would, each time I got a new car, I would test drive the two or three, and then I always came to the same car, back to the, you know, to the same brand. And then ultimately, I knew that this was part of my identity. It's how I saw myself. It made the decision easy. And in fact, when I got ready for a new car, I would just call the dealer, tell them the color and the number, and have it delivered to my office. So it can make some decision. That's why it's so important that you really think about this in working with clients, about how you can help them revise the model of how and who they are, this bedrock of identity. Now, here's an example. You don't make brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it's not part of your identity. It either doesn't register or gets extruded as noise or, well, you know, I just did that. This may be, I believe, why 95% of people who diet and lose weight gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. That's the bedrock of identity. So they live back into the image that they had prior to dieting. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity rather than it belonging to somebody else or just being a good idea. Now, you know that when you can picture a danger, you can trigger the entire body response of fight and flight. While your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. And your conscious mind needs to incorporate into an evolving story, which is part of our job description, to include and assemble the imagery as part of that client's story. Remember, it has to totally be the client's story. You can't run in plays or disguise suggestions in the form of a have you thought about or give answers or problem solve, because that takes the point of reference away from the client, and it also shuts down the exploratory part of their brain and shifts to the left prefrontal cortex, and the process has been stopped. That's even been incorporated into the ICF material now. They are incorporating a little bit of neuroscience in what they do. So otherwise, unconscious images and messages already there will delete access to or believability of the imagery. So there are three key elements in this. Repetition, the neural networks dedicated to your vision must be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated until it becomes hardwired. Two, consciously incorporate this new vision into your ongoing story to be metabolized as part of the self, as part of who you really are now. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision. Be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. All the senses, all the experience in every way. So, a footnote. Remember we talked about the University of Waterloo study? Put it in an output channel. The people who read the same passage out loud did 40% better on a task. Write it down. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory. Then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. My suggestion, we touched on this last time, keep a journal. Whenever you have an important seminar, I hope this would qualify, write down what you're finding and what's useful. It will be a way of making it yours, because when you write it down, it's part of your story. It's not a play Kruger ran in. It's your story. You put it in your own words. And be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. Again, so A vision can be guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's an example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was in prison, he essentially was isolated and had no physical activity all day long. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He broke 100 on two occasions. He had two 99s. The rest were triple digits. So to preserve his sanity, he decided to visualize golf. He would imagine getting up, putting on his clothes, driving to his favorite golf course, getting out, smelling the air, warming up, hitting each shot, walking. He played golf in his mind 7 to 9 hours a day for 7 years, 7 days a week. When he was released from captivity, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision, mind over matters. Four, and these last few, don't worry, we'll be very short, so we'll still have time for questions or comments. Insight changes the brain. What we know in looking at hooking up somebody with an fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, at the moment of an insight, an aha experience, three different parts of the brain light up, and that releases certain chemicals that are different because they elevate someone to a state of mind that's more synthetic and integrative and creative. Think about when your client had an aha moment or when you had an aha moment. Somehow you had access to a little bit more or different. Now, hook that person, that same person up, and give ideas, information, facts, directives, orders, Google search results. Nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. So as important as this insight-induced change is, it's the sustained attention to a systematic way to incorporate it into someone's story that makes a difference. Five, take action. Vincent van Gogh put it really simply, if you hear a voice say, I'm not a painter, by all means paint, then that voice will be silenced. Remember, the world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important, but then put it into action. Remember the last aspect of the coaching model when we ask a client to briefly summarize what they're taking away to make sure that they get it, it's theirs, and then what will be their plan to put that into or start that action? What's going to be their next step? We want to hear an action plan that they will commit to. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The next most important thing about a plan, probably equally, is to stick to it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life can separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. And I heard this story in person from this guy. 141 publishers turned him down. He had a really unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car, of the trunk. To get what you've never had, you probably have to do what you've never done. Now, he happened to know a little bit about marketing. He gave every person on the jury in a very famous trial, a copy of his book. So they, most of them were seen reading his book when the jury was in recess at the O.J. Simpson trial. Tells you it happened a little while ago. But he knew a little about marketing, too. So, six, identity transformation. A new experience. This is the P of the roadmap. We're going to talk about that. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. And when it's consistent and repeated, brain circuitry is stabilized and the brain rewires. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a part of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. Now, as a caveat or a sidebar here, this is not how I've been talking to you guys now. That's not how you'd really talk to a patient. This is about talk to a client about what they are dealing with. This is about training. So here's a summary of steps 4 and 5. Decide what to change. Map the changes. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change that wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors, not on problems, to frame creative new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it. Coming to the end of the past, as you probably know from counseling and therapy, if you've had any accident, that's not going to create a new story. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize, a focus on now and next, to lay new mental maps. And this is a summary of an overview of steps 4 and 5. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to really enhance brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning. To put too simply, left brain and right brain, intellectual and emotional. Facilitate insight. Be a catalyst rather than give advice. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect new ideas and energy back to the process of the new ideas and back to the system of hopefully including shrinking the change to the next step. What's the next step? Remember that power is in the focus and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on possibilities, on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. It won't help to explore the why of a problem or the history of it. Focus aligns and directs energy and effort. So why not look in the direction you're going? I'll tell you a story in just a minute. Emphasize positive adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Same reason. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. You want to end your coaching session with knowing what it is your client is going to do on the discussion, the plan, the system. What's their next step? When they hang up the phone or decouple from you on in cyberspace, they need to know what's the next thing I'm going to do. And then how am I going to figure out what's after that? Think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way. No longer the old story. And this is something we'll talk about. How do you actually incorporate that in talking to a client to help them evolve their identity and develop that operating system that you're developing with them in a new and different way? I'm going to put us on lecture mode, on discussion mode, so if you manage the background noise, and I'm interested in any questions or thoughts or clarifications. Okay, we're there now. Any thoughts, questions, or things that might be helpful to talk about?
Dave, it's Derek Jack here. How are you?
Hey, Derek. How are you, man?
Good to hear you, my friend. I'm doing well.
You too, yeah.
I want to chat with you a little bit more of this offline, but I do have a question. Do you have a favorite exercise that you use to try and get people into this type of mindset? Is there one or two separate different exercises, thoughts that you like to give a client, ways that you like to get them into this?
That's a good question, and I don't really use the exercises in the client workbook to do that with a client. The only the exercise I most regularly use with a new client is to get them to fill out the top three needs and top three ideals that we talked about and touched on briefly, because it's useful for me and for them to have a clear idea of what their basic needs are, what their fundamental ideals are that determine what in meeting them will result in self-esteem, the only place I know self-esteem comes from, so that whatever we strategize and look at in terms of goals is in the same direction as needs and ideals and incorporated, so that all of them is going in the same direction. Now, to answer your question, I don't think it's an exercise. I think the simplest thing is to help someone focus, to look, for example, what specifically would you like us to focus on in this session? And then once you're clear about that, because you may need to do a little bit of work if they're, because they're not accustomed. As you know, our client, you know this very well, Eric, our clients are not accustomed. They're not hardwired to have coaching conversations. We sometimes forget that because we're hardwired to have conversations of free association. Think about the last time any of you were on the patio with a glass of wine with a buddy. You'd talk in paragraphs. You'd take a breath. The buddy would take over and talk for two or three breaths. This is the way we talk about, we free associate. Coaching conversation is very different. We ask a client, what specifically would you like to focus on? And where would you like to get to? The bookends of this specific conversation, the model that when we stick with it and help someone stay focused and create a successive approximation to their goal, they're going to know in a beginning way how to do this themselves when they hang up. We're going to do it consistently, and they're going to see the benefit of this focused conversation. So I think the power of a question, and we talked about this, and Einstein talked about this, a question aligns the energy field of the brain to focus on a specific thing. That's a powerful colleague we have in our work to help the client focus specifically on the next thing and on a system. And we help them develop a system, and that's what creates effectiveness. That's what creates aha moments. So it's internally generated. It's something they can ultimately download, but it's going to be self-perpetuating because it creates effectiveness. You know, as a sidebar, and I think you've heard this, Eric, every psychological symptom I ever saw in any patient in the 25 years I practiced psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, the psychological symptom was due to an attempt at effectiveness by that person. Now, given the situation or the family or the circumstances, they had to engage in extreme ways to try to be effective. Every anorexic was trying to be effective. There was at least one thing in the world she could control, and that's what went into and out of her body. It was an attempt at effectiveness. She just needed a better story with a different protagonist. Her, I didn't know this at the time, rather than the family and opposing what they wanted as a way of saying, no, this is where you in and I began, is an example. Now, Eric, does that answer your question in a beginning way?
Yes, it does. It does. And I'll shoot you an email for the rest of it.
Okay, great. We got maybe 1 minute. And remember, if you have questions or have ones later, jot them down, and we'll have more of a discussion at the end of our final seminar next week. I'm really very interested in your thoughts and ideas about this, and I very much appreciate all the questions and things you've sent in. So anything else for right now?
Could I ask a question, Dave? It's Andrew from Sydney. Pleasure to be on the
welcome from down under, my man. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thank you so much. I've been listening to the recordings. And,
okay. It was great to have you live.
Yeah, I got on here. Thank you to Lisa. I ended up in her Okay. Said hello. I interrupted her via Turbo Bridge because the PIN number wasn't correct.
Super.
She gave
super.
The right one. But what a team you guys are.
what time is it there now?
It's 11 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, 11 a.m.
11 a.m. tomorrow, right? Tuesday?
Yes, that sounds
okay,
right.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I've got a question, right? You just said something then, as always, which is profound. What would you like us to focus on in this session, and where would you like to get to, right? Very beautiful. Now, when I originally was listening to the recordings, I talked about the research that was done around, unless someone was in a place of, wanting better words now, where there was a pain, there was a need to really have a, to really make a difference, they wouldn't engage in the content and really take it on. That was that academic survey that was something that was done.
Okay, so the question specifically is what, Andrew?
My question is this. If I frame two questions around that, I don't think they're as gentle as yours, but I think you may encapsulate in what you just said. First question is, what have you learnt about yourself since our last mentoring session? And then the second question is, what is your biggest challenge that you would like to solve right now?
Okay, that's a great way, and I haven't heard that before, but that's a great way to summarize. And it makes it even more specific than what I may ask is bring me up to date about where you are. You're asking it more specifically, so I may plagiarize you. And the second part is asking what would you, in your own words, what would you like us to focus on for this session? So those are two important beginnings. Now, I would emphasize not to combine what do you want to focus on, where do you want to get to. Those are two questions. You want to know what somebody wants to focus on. You may need to work at specifying and defining that more specifically, then to look at where somebody wants to get to with that so that you have the framework of that conversation. You have a map, a destination, where you are now, the destination, and you can measure progress along the way because you'll have to, as we talked, as a coach, to shepherd that conversation to move it along if somebody's, you know, elaborating or going down a rabbit hole or pursuing somebody in the outback where you are, Andrew. Yeah, let's focus specifically on developing that idea.
Yeah,
so you may want to help
somebody. And we develop the map with the questioning at the beginning of the conversation. Then we go on a journey to get to the destination along the way.
Collaboratively. That's the unique aspect among all the professions of professional coaching is the collaborative model. When you do financial trading, it's not collaborative because you're giving some. This is totally different when you work with your clients in a coaching context.
Correct.
Because it's collaborative because your focus is on their story, but you're together co-creating and developing a new one.
Correct. Yes.
Great question. I know we're over. Thanks for hanging in with me. And remember, we'll talk some more. Great questions, Eric and Andrew. Thanks so much. Look forward to picking up with you next week. See you guys.
Thank
Take good care of yourselves.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Yeah.